years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Really, when I think about this, it's so embarrassing. All the content of my show surrounded by all of these very serious grown-ups, all these very important people. Oh, my God. The most important thing in my life, weather. Dr. Dave.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Top rules to take your girlfriend to the strip club. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the NYPD police commissioners from 1987 to 2007. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
You know, I love my country, but what gets into people every year? Hi, I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain later here on Sterling at Night.
Shoplifter threatens to shoot up the place. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the very last weekend of Pride Month. This is the end of Pride Month.
Cool, enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me.
Which means your Christy McNichol update.
Her coming out in 2012, both in her life and the more broad context of LGBTQ+, would represent acceptance. By sharing her personal stories, she had contributed to the visibility and representation of LGBTQ+ individuals, breaking down barriers and stereotypes. Her honesty revealed a long-term relationship and a powerful message of love, acceptance, and pride.
And your pride spokesperson.
Hello, young folks. What's you shaking? I got a try that scene you're making. Liberace's turning on.
And a really obnoxious straight guy commenting on the gay community.
Just wanted to wish the LGBTQ+ community a happy Pride Month. Enjoy, but don't forget to thank a straight person for your existence.
And those of you who fantasize that things should be the way they used to be.
Our first house nearly never got built. My wife was so bent on helping the builder. Woman, I said, leave that poor man alone and make us some coffee. Not that kind you've been buying either. Instant Maxwell House coffee. Red jar, good to the last drop. Maxwell House. The instant that tastes like coffee. Be a good little Maxwell House wife, and we'll be happy here for a long time.
Maxwell House coffee. Instant and ground.
Listen, when the production wizard spent all that time pulling out MP3 audio, I have to use it up, and this is the last day I could use it up. And about your gay crush.
A lot of people, you know, they didn't really think that we play the instruments or we wrote the song, so this is kind of like, you know, you think we're young now when you listen to this, and it was 2.5 years ago, and it was our second album then, right. And we were doing it on our own.
Taylor Hanson.
Hello, young folks. What's you shaking? I gotta try that scene you're making. Liberace's turning on.
I was reminded of Liberace because for some reason in the bathroom of my very traditional barbershop, there's exactly one 8x10 photo and it's of Liberace.
Cool,
And the gayest and the best line of any hit song ever, Motown Monday. What? You want to hear that again? I know you do. Oh, the lights go on Cameo Parkway, and you and I are taken back to a moment in time when everything was lighting up the sky, like the 4th of July.
Uh-huh. Big city.
Whoa.
Using penne?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, where that? It don't taste like the ocean. Don't get your pasta in motion.
Here's my gift to you. J-U-M-O. Go to TikTok. Search J-U-M-O. And you will thank me. If you're a straight man, it will propel your marriage another 10 years. You won't even have to think about it. Anytime you imagine leaving your wife, imagine you're not aroused enough, all you have to do is go to TikTok and search J-U-M-O. If you're considering lesbianism, if you're thinking maybe the answer for me is lesbianism, go to J-U-M-O and you will thank me.
There is a thing called pretty privilege. There is a thing called white privilege. There is a thing called tall privilege. And we have to acknowledge that. And so the part of it is about race.
Kinsey, can you believe the hostility this girl is facing for the crime of getting people interested in the WNBA? You'd think the players in particular would be grateful.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kennedy Carter just proved that she's as trashy as her mama spelled her name. And to dramatically recreate Charles Barkley's rant, y'all petty. He said, you women out there, y'all petty, man. He said, these girls are hating on Caitlin Clark. They should be thanking her.
Coming up, you and I are going to vote on the Song of Summer for 2024. Now, you hadn't thought about that in a while, had you? You were still thinking of Young and in Love, Mbop by Hanson, So in Love by The Times, great summer songs. But my friend, you must get with it. This is the time of great summer songs. Right now, there are people hitting their hormones. There are people becoming hormonal, breaking out of puberty, hiding under the boardwalk, down the shore, Santa Monica, Oregon. Very horny. And they have songs. They have their own songs. They're not by The Times. They're not from Cameo Parkway. They're modern current songs. I'm going to share three of them with you, the hot summer songs. And then you can, two things will happen. One, you will be current. You haven't been current in a very long time. The last time you were current is when you said to your financial advisor, or otherwise known as your uncle, and you said to your financial advisor, should I cash out my Social Security now at the age of 64 when I can, or should I wait till 70? That was the last time you asked for financial advice, and the advice you got was absolutely wrong. But you need to get up to date. You need to know what the top three current summer songs are. And we will explore that and share that coming up in just seconds. Oh, what is this? This is Sterling. What?
Cool, enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me.
J-U-M-O. Do you want to hear the worst testing song ever? You know the songs you hear on those crummy little FMs, not the real FMs like KMBZ in Kansas City, not the real AMs like the 50,000-watt stations this show is on, KMOX. Frank Moreno, I was on this station long before you, buddy. 8 years before you. But good luck with your practicing. Good luck rehearsing there, buddy. Too many times. Okay. The worst testing song ever in history was a dominant hit, huge hit. But any time I have asked 500, 1,000 people to say, do you like these songs? Which of these songs do you like best? This one will always come out at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
KFRC San Francisco.
All right, I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by NASA.
Remember when NASA sent a woman to space for only 6 days, and they gave her 100 tampons.
All right, all together now. Here we go.
Hey, www, somebody stop me. www.if you could copy PhD 2400 Market Street 1210 on your dial that powerful power station with the 50 kilowatt smile. Yeah, Sterling, 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 Sterling from sea to shining sea. This is www.somebody stop me PhD.
Oh, now be sure to put away your blocks.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts.
Oh, we're so proud of you. You cleaned up your room.
And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do?
No! Why? I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
If you were in Philadelphia, you heard on 1210 WPHT on Thursday night the finest analysis of the quote, quote, presidential debate. The finest analysis. Where did you hear that? Sterling Every Damn Night. Why is he calling it that? That's what it's called on the Philadelphia radio station that airs Sterling Every Damn Night, 1210 WPHT. Greg Stocker, the program director and morning host and producer and board op, all agreed that that's what we should call it, Sterling Every Damn Night. And then I realized that the presidential debate was going to be on from 9 o'clock. My show on WPHT starts at 9 o'clock, Monday through Friday. What'd he say? Yeah, Monday through Friday.
Are you going to still do your Sunday show?
Yes, because I'm an idiot. And I said, well, then what? And I figured they were going to take Fox News or CNBC or CNN or something official. You know how these news people like to do things? They like to do a presidential debate and then drag it out as long and as boring as possible. And I'm like, well, so I said, so what are you going to do when it ends? They said, well, we're going to go to you right away, hard right to you. I'm like, what? At the minute the presidential debate ended on 1210 WPHT in Philadelphia, the sixth largest city in America, owned by Odyssey, soon to be owned by George Soros. No, that's not a joke, really. Soon to be owned by George
Blue
Soros.
Blue skin and old balls, gross.
I said, well, okay, what should I do? I'm thinking, what should I do? And they, of course, made very official promos saying, and your comments and your feeling as soon as it's over with Walter Sterling. I'm like, oh, really? All right. So I thought, who would be the best people to comment? Who would have the best, most insightful, useful comments on the, quote, presidential debate? Well, who'd we get? We got Viva. No, we got Aviva Vegas. I can never say it. Darn it. I can never get it right. We got Aviva Vegas, who's a foot fetishist, a woman who has a side hustle as a foot fetishist. Men of a certain age and decorum pay her to rub her feet, look at her feet, totally legal, not sex, just feet. All right, we'll get Aviva Vegas. And then we should have an international perspective. We got Dave Armstrong. Dave, we got Dave, who is a ufologist in Canada, Canadian ufologist, who does a show like George Norrie, except in Canada. And then we got Donald Trunk. Donald Trunk is a male stripper. We had Donald Trunk, male entertainer, Aviva Vegas, and Dave Scott. Sorry, what did I say? Dave Scott, a ufologist from Canada. And they commented about what they heard during the presidential, quote, quote, debate. What mystifies me about this event, truly mystifies me, are all of the people, including very serious people. I mean, the most serious people who ever lived, the most serious people in America, were shocked. We're shocked at the president's decorum, inability to track, inability to complete a sentence, all of those things. They were shocked. Now, either they were pretending to be shocked because what they were really scared of was the fact that you and I could see it. There was no filter. They could not blame Joe Rogan for wacky editing. They could not blame Greg Gutfeld for wacky editing. There it was, live on sacred CNN. Nobody could say, well, this is rigged, you know. No. But those of us who watch News Nation, Lee Harris's famous News Nation, Newsmax, Fox News, those of us who watch all of those channels and several others, we had seen Joe Biden performing like that for 3.5 years. Speech after speech after speech, he'd lose track, he'd get confused over and over again. And, gee, he wouldn't come out of the basement at the last election. Right there, I, who neither loved him nor hated him, I'm like, there's something wrong. There's something wrong. That reminds me of an original Star Trek. There was an original Star Trek. I got to find it and pull the audio for you next week. There was an original Star Trek where on a planet where it was suddenly not behaving the way the Federation wanted it to behave, it turns out that the Federation employee who they had sent there decades earlier to organize the people and bring them democracy was only appearing on TV with a uniform that the Federation people didn't recognize. He never was seen walking around. He seemed to be comatose when he spoke. He spoke once or twice a week, but always on the same location, never moving, never walking, never deviating from what seemed like a script and saying scary, vaguely confusing things until Captain James Kirk and Leonard Nimoy found where the broadcast booth was and learned that he was drugged up and handed a script and threatened with his life. And that's why he was saying these wacky things on this original Star Trek. You remember that episode? Do you remember it? 888-688-9258. What episode was that? The original Star Trek that had a good Federation employee who went there and became vaguely a dictator. But when Kirk found him in the broadcast booth and turned him around, he was stoned and was forced to read a script against his will. What episode was that? 888-688-9258, 888-688-9258. The only people who would be really shocked by what happened Thursday are people who had not been seeing him all along. Those of us who had been seeing him all along, it was actually a pretty good performance, wasn't it? It was totally normal. My name is Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by Harvey Holiday.
Late on a Sunday night, it's Holiday with love music, and it's so sad to see good love go bad.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Top rules to take your girlfriend to the strip club. Details later, strippers on the loose, Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the NYPD police commissioners from 1987 to 2007. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
You know, I love my country, but what gets into people every year? Hi, I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain later here on Sterling at Night.
Shoplifter threatens to shoot up the place. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
The most jingles, Sterling every night. The most jingles.
Yes, if you have no taste and you'd like to hear this show every damn night, what you need to do tomorrow morning is sit down at that that really old laptop that your grandkids gave you and write a note to this station and say, we understand Mr. Sterling's on every night, 9 to midnight Eastern, and we'd like to hear that show rather than yet another old guy screaming at the Democrats. We'd like to really like hear something different, some different point of view. All right, Walter M. Sterling, Sterling Every Night, 38 past the hour. Welcome. We're live coast to coast. There's nothing else live at this time. That's what all the sales sheets say about this show. And it's live! Exclamation mark. And it's live! Okay, great. None of them say, and it's great! None of them say, what a good show! People from around the country are celebrating. No, never. None of the sales sheets say that. No. There's a secret about research, marketing research, consumer research. And the secret is this, that when you're asked, when people are asked, do you like this tire? Is this tire better than most tires? The same as most tires? Worse than most tires? Don't know. The majority answer to any topic on any consumer product is don't know. Meanwhile, they see 6% love the tire, 14% think it's okay, and 2% hate it. But the real answer is 43% don't know. And these guys, these MBAs who are desperate to turn everything into a number, a percent, a spreadsheet, desperate to make it so that they can manipulate the numbers, they'll study the 2%, the 5%, completely ignoring the real answer, which is don't know. To most products, don't know. I first realized this when I was working at a radio station. I was just out of college. I was in New York. I was all excited to be at a radio. And I was for the first time ever seeing research, seeing the results of research. It was MAGID, M-A-G-I-D, MAGID research in media land at the time, considered very big, solid, real research. And they asked the questions like, I'm not kidding you, does this station air too many jingles? Yes, no, maybe, don't know. Did this station, it gets better, did this station used to air too many jingles? Yes, no, maybe, don't know. Should this station air more jingles? Now, remember, This survey was being asked of dentists, doctors, bus drivers, elevator operators, third shift workers, RNs, and they're asking them, should the radio station that they listen to, maybe they're not sure if they even listen to it, should it be airing more jingles, less jingles? Did it used to air too many jingles? I'm not kidding you. And then they'd ask it about the competitor. Does this competing radio station air too many jingles, too few jingles? And I'm sitting there, I'm 22 years old. I'm looking at all these very serious grown-ups in their $1,000 suits and their $500 shoes, and they're all very important, and they're looking at charts. I'm like, the real answer is don't know. And finally, because I didn't have a mortgage, I said, isn't the real answer don't know? Isn't that the real answer? And doesn't that mean we can do whatever we want? If most people don't know, which means they don't have either knowledge or an opinion, then we can do whatever we want when it comes to jingles, that whole important emphasis on jingles. Do the disc jockeys talk too much or too little, just the right amount, could talk more? That's what they ask. But the majority answer is don't know. And when the field reporters from local TV stations went to local bars to get an honest point of view, and what could be a more honest point of view than at 11 o'clock on a weekday night to go to a bar and ask the people in a bar at 11 o'clock on a weekday night what they thought of the presidential debate? Over and over and over again, the reporter had to admit that most people in the bar did not know that there was a debate. When they came to the bar, they didn't know they were going to see the debate on TV. They came to the bar to what? To get drunk. That's why they came to the bar. That's why they came to the bar. Most people didn't know. And yes, 15 million people watched it. 21 million people watched it. I think that was the number. 21 million, 15 million in the demo. How many does that leave? 3 billion didn't watch it, didn't know, didn't care. Because when candidates declare, you've decided at that second who you're going to vote for. And therefore, you don't need to watch debates. You don't need to read the God editorial. You don't. Most people didn't know. And that's the real answer. And that's why I try to share and talk about experiences that I think we all have had. You ready? Here's our big list. Water in the basement. The check engine light. Trouble at the parent-teacher conference. Trouble with the kids. Those are the things you and I care about, and those are the things that we think about. How did I spend most of my day Friday? Did I spend my time calling editorial page writers? You know, I'm a talk show host. I'm a very official talk show. Did I call editorial page? Did I call other talk show hosts and say, how did you handle this? How should we handle this? No. I went to 4 different supermarkets to solve my problem. What was my problem? Cheapest milk. Where was the cheapest milk? And it's not at Save-A-Lot, nor is it at Walmart. In the area where I live, it was a local regional chain. In every area, it's going to be different. You would figure it automatically be Walmart or Save-A-Lot. It's not. You got to know. Now, if you have the luxury of not worrying about the price of milk, if you can spend $6 for a gallon of milk, and you don't have to think about it, you don't have to shop, you don't have to review it. If you're that person, congratulations and good for you. And I hope it stays like that for you forever. It was that way for me through a lot of my life, but now it's not that way. I have to go to 3 or 4 or 5 different supermarkets to find the cheapest milk for my family. That's what I have to do. And therefore, I don't have time to go over the finer points of the editorial in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and what Goofy said on MSNBC. I don't have the time. I got to feed my kids. How about you? My phone number is 888-688-9258, 888-688. WALT. And coming up, I have a way to make your kids happy over the 4-day holiday coming up that is reasonable, fun, participatory, everything that you and I dream of. We will not have any dilemmas. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Anna Kendrick.
So, and now there's a scene in the movie that I understand was pretty uncomfortable. You guys were in the shower together.
Uncomfortable. It was the best day of my life.
Good guys.
We keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. In case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the birdman. So he.
Stephen and Selena of JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. They are the official bakery of Sterling every damn night. They do not pay for this time. This is what's known in influencer land as earned media because they make great baked goods. We're celebrating the fact that this is the last day of Pride Month, and they, in fact, have an official Pride Month baked good. It is called, ready, Sticky Buns. Welcome. I understand you have a spectacular dessert that even I could make for the 4th of July. Please share with us what this spectacular dessert is, and please sell it very hard and make us want it.
Hey, Walter, summer's off to a great start. Really excited about this dessert because it's fun because the 4th of July is right upon us. Everybody's excited for summer. This is a delicious treat. It's really nice and cool to eat. And it takes nice fruit, strawberries, blueberries. Try to get local berries if you can. And it's great for the kids. It has whipped cream, layers of whipped cream.
Well, we don't know what it is. No, we're on radio. We're on radio. What is it?
Okay, it's the Patriotic Parfait Cup, which is the fruit and whipped cream and cake.
Wait, let me help you. The Patriotic Parfait Cup. Say it three times fast. Patriotic Parfait Cup. It's a parfait. Everybody loves parfait. What's in it?
Fruit, whipped cream, cake. That's how I'm making mine for 4th of July, because it's red, white, and blue. It's going to look awesome with those colors for anybody that's having a 4th of July party. And it's a fun treat for the kids because, like, maybe parents that don't want their kids eating from the ice cream truck, it kind of looks like those fun desserts that the ice cream truck has, like the Patriotic Rocket or any kind of sundae, because it has a lot of whipped cream on top and it has sprinkles. So it's a low-sugar treat that the kids can enjoy, and the parents could definitely, you know, share with the kids as well. And it'll be perfect for any kind of 4th of July table. Like if anybody wanted to decorate their table with patriotic desserts, put 20 of those out because they're really easy to eat, and everybody will just grab them up really quick.
It's a parfait, fresh berries, fresh whipped cream. What else?
I like to use angel food cake because it's spongy. And it's somebody could make it if they wanted to, but it's easy to find, Walter, in the supermarket. Anybody could pick up a $3 angel food cake and use that to layer the fruit and the whipped cream and the cake and make layers in the cup. Use a clear plastic cup because this way the colors of the red, white, and blue are shown. Angel food cake is really nice and white because it has egg whites, and that gives it the white color. You use yellow cake, it's not really going to look great. You can always substitute yellow cake or maybe cookies too if somebody doesn't have them in their house in their kitchen. But I always say to make sure to chill them for a good 30 minutes before serving because they taste delicious, nicely chilled on a hot summer day.
This is what's great about Stephen the Baker at JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. He always gives us terrific tips. Now that was a really good tip. Chill it before you serve it, and don't use the golden angel food cake. Use the white angel food cake. These are the little differences between the way you cook and your mother cooked and a professional bakes, a real professional like Stephen at JB Bakery. I hope Selena's there. Is she there? Because she makes you interesting.
Yeah, Selena and I
here,
really
yes.
enjoy this thing.
Yeah. Now, Selena, what's going on? Are you tan? Are you enjoying the summer? Or you have to work all the time? What's the deal here? Selena is the manager at the JB Bakery.
So I am definitely enjoying the summer. I've gotten at least 2 beach trips in so far. I had a relaxing weekend. We went to a party yesterday for someone's graduation, so that was a nice day off. And I just did a little bit of work here today, but mostly just for the show tonight, just helping to get ready and make the parfaits, which I'm really excited about. One of my tips for the parfaits, whenever I make whipped cream from scratch, I really like to throw in just a little tiny bit of cinnamon, just a dash, and a little extra vanilla, because I think it just really brings out the flavor more and just kind of takes it to the next level. It tastes a little bit more gourmet, I think, and a little more impressive, and definitely brings out the flavor of the fruit. So if you're not allergic, I would add some cinnamon or maybe even some chocolate.
Did you say the flavor of the fruit? Did you say that for Pride Month?
I mean, look, it is the last day. We have to get every innuendo in that we can.
This is our Selena of JB Bakery and Stephen, JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Here's what you do. Do you want this recipe for this easy-to-make, delicious, yummy, and visually stunning dessert? Here's all you got to do. Send me a note, waltermsterling@gmail.com. Ask for the recipe, waltermsterling@gmail.com. What's great about his recipes is they're simple, they include tips and photos. They do a great job. And you will thank me. So send a request for the recipe to WalterMSterling@gmail.com. Selena and Stephen, I wish you a happy 4th and thank you for being an important part of Sterling every damn night.
We're guys. We keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. In case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. So he won't take me down to his lair.
You love that song, don't you? I know you do. All right, I have a big hour coming up. You know what we're going to do? We're going to listen to the top three summer songs of 2024. And this way you will be informed. You'll be hip with the young folk. And you'll be able to discuss them in detail. You won't be left behind the way you always are at the 4th of July, even if you're forced to do all of the cooking. My name is Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
All right, coming up, you and I are going to go over the top three summer songs of 2024. This way you'll know what the hell they are. You won't seem like such a loser when you're around your kids, and you'll help decide which one should be the best summer song of 2024. All of that and you. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and now weather from Dr. Dave.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Top rules to take your girlfriend to the strip club. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the NYPD police commissioners from 1987 to 2007. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
You know, I love my country, but what gets into people every year? Hi, I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain later here on Sterling at Night.
Shoplifter threatens to shoot up the place. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
In the original Star Trek series, they went to a planet where a good Federation officer had been sent to calm things, organize society. But then after a couple of years, the messages they were getting back from that planet were wrong. And they were concerned. So Kirk and Spock went there and they found that it was a sort of dictatorship. That suddenly there was a sort of dictatorship. It wasn't the way it was supposed to be. And what they found was that their friend, who was very much in charge of this planet, now was wearing a sort of a dictator's uniform. He was wearing a dictator's uniform. And they found where he was broadcasting from because they only saw him or knew about him on TV on this alien planet. And he was only available on this television channel once or twice a week. And he seemed stoned and drugged and seemed to be mouthing dictatorial things. And, well, sure enough, they find the studio where you could only see him from the waist up. And he was stoned. And he was reading from a prompter. And he had been told to say these things or else he'd be killed. And what was that original Star Trek episode? Do you know what that was? 888-688-WALT. 888-688-WALT. I am looking for a phone screener, which I can't find. There it is. There it is. Oh, my gosh. 888-688-9258. 888-688-9258.
Thank you. So lovely to be here. Lovely to be shared on the stage with these guys again. This is the song that kicked it all off for us. This is Mary's Prayer.
Everything is wonderful, and being here.
name is Heavenly. Every single day she says everything is free. I used to be so careless, as if I couldn't care less. Did I have to make this mess when I was Mary's prayer? Suddenly the heavens roared, suddenly the rain came down, and suddenly was washed away.
Now I'll tell you what's wrong with me, and it's wrong with you too. You get on a mission that you're going to look something up, study something, read an article, and then you look up and on TV, you see a vision. You see a beautiful woman, and she's live, and she's in a newscast, and then, all right, well, she's pretty, I'm happily married, la, la, la. And then they Chiron her name, and there's her name. And I'm looking at this moments before I go on the air, and I'm starting to feel very romantic toward her, very spring night toward her, very spring night toward her. And I'm thinking of ballads that I love, like this one by Danny Wilson. And I'm like looking at her Chiron there, and she's on Fox, and it says Lydia Moynihan, and she's a writer for the New York Post. Now, those three things alone, that triangulation is exciting to me right there. New York Post, Fox News, New York, Lydia Moynihan. She's really pretty and obviously brilliant if she's on Fox and she works for the New York Post. What do? I do the thing that any normal man would do, never admits to, never discusses with their friends. I search her on Facebook. I search her on Instagram. That's what I do. And there are all these really nice pictures of Lydia Moynihan, who's well-educated, went to college, interned at prestigious television networks. I'm like, this woman's perfect for me, Lydia Moynihan. And then I think, would Lydia Moynihan find me in any way attractive? I'm on the air. I'm a successful broadcaster. I have suits, Lydia. Oh, yeah. And then I have three daughters, three cats, and, oh, darn it, a wife. A beautiful wife who, thank God, never listens to this show. And why doesn't she listen to this show? Because, and I quote, we hear your show all week. Every time I talk, she thinks she's hearing my show. But she doesn't. Because she doesn't know about my sudden, instant, and I promise you, fleeting infatuation with the New York Post's Lydia Moynihan. Lydia's going to have a brilliant career. I don't remember a word she said, but I'm Walter M. Sterling. It's a quarter past the hour. And this is Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Frank Rizzo.
You're a real crumb bum.
All right. 888-688-9258. 888-688-9258. What'd you say? Allison Sterling on Sunday. Hi.
Yeah, it's been a while since I talked to you. Anyway, I'm a big 60s TV fan, not just a Star Trek fan. But anyway, and I don't really use computers. I use my brain. Anyway, I'm kind of a geek about it. It's called Patterns of Force. It's a second season episode, and it's kind of infamous. It's the Nazi episode where, anyway, this historian goes to a planet, and it's totally chaotic, totally anarchistic. So he decides to just install kind of a Nazi society to put things in order. But one of his lieutenants takes it seriously and gets pretty bloody after that. And he tries to, and declares war on a sister planet and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, and you're right. It's kind of like Biden. Oh, dear. So what can you say?
Describe the scene where we see the dictator and what happened to him. Why is he?
That's right. To the end. He's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. He's kind of he's giving pronouncements. He's all these things, but he's totally drugged and he's in a chamber in the and he reads all these pronouncements to everything, but he's being fed all of it by the one who's his second in command, and to become a really oppressive society. And it's towards the end of the episode, and Kirk goes in, and he's trying to help him because the man was actually an historian. Maybe I mentioned this already, but he was an historian who wanted this. This was a completely anarchistic society, and he was worried what would happen to it. So he thought, I'm just going to install a really strong, fascistic, crazy society for a while, and then get them in order, and then we can go back to something else. And of course, that backfired on him big time. So. Anyway, I can be a real geek about this all night, but you've got other things to talk about.
Well, anyway, no, this is what I talk about. That's why this show is better than all the loser shows that just scream at the Democrats. Now, tell me the name of the episode again. What was the name of the Star
Trek
episode?
The second season episode is called Patterns of Force.
It was brilliant. I have never. It was traumatic, and I've never forgotten it. I have forgotten pretty much every other original Star Trek episode, but that one was like, whoa, Patterns of Force.
Yeah. Yeah, because it was a Desi Lu show and they filmed it at MGM, they had all this, all the incredible costumes and everything. So, one episode was a Nazi episode, one was a Roman episode, one was, different eras and different things that took place on different planets and that kind of thing, extrapolated out into space and everything. That was a great episode, it's true, it really was. And,
Of the current Star Treks,
I'm not watching them. I got to admit.
Well, no, I hated Discovery. I still hate Discovery.
Yeah.
I like Brave New Worlds, which patterns itself on the traditional original Star Treks and is totally watchable. Picard was a lot of work. No thanks. it was just a lot. Okay, so he's in a vineyard. He's old. I got it. And but Brave New Worlds is good, and I think you would like it. I hated Discovery. I'm like, how is it on Discovery? Every character at some point was the captain. How is that? Every character they rotated through to give everybody diversity.
That would work really well, wouldn't it?
Oh, it was horrible because one of the touchstones of Star Trek is that. Ultimately, somebody's in charge. The captain ultimately can decide and is in charge, and that is an ordered universe. And we find that comforting, don't we, Allison?
Somewhat, but I'm kind of like chaos too, somewhat anyway. But anyway, I'm just a geek. I spend most of my time watching TV shows from the 60s. I just got through The Untouchables. Oh, that was 50s and 60s. And now I'm going through The Entire Man from U.N.C.L.E., so... From the 60s, one of my favorite shows of all time. So,
Did you watch The Outer Limits?
Oh, absolutely love it. In fact, I just watched that a few months ago. Yeah.
The very first Outer Limits is about a radio station. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Monster took over the tower. That's right, Cliff Robertson, yes.
The Galaxy Being, it's called, yeah. No,
Thank
that was
you.
A brilliant show. I wish it had been on longer, but the mere fact it was on as long as it was pretty amazing. Considering I like the innocence of TV shows from that time and some of the intelligence of them too, right? It's like the original Mission Impossible was so clever with, there was a team of people who, and they would put on these big ruses to try to trick the villains and into things. And not, it wasn't just Tom Cruise falling off a plane, right? And so, they had great people like Martin Landau, and, I live in the past a lot, to be honest. I live quite a bit in the past. The only machine I would really love to have is a time machine. But anyway,
I would like to have a time machine to buy real estate.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't know how to do that. I just go back and buy about 50 copies of Fantastic Four number one from 1961, stuff like that.
Yes, exactly. Allison, I love you. I think you're great. I love that you're a geek. You're a Midnight Misfit. You belong in the Midnight Misfit Club, and I'm grateful that you listen. I'm grateful that you call. You call anytime. I love this stuff.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening
to
Sterling every damn night. It's 24 past the hour. 24 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. My number is 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. What should we do now? Just a second. Don't know. Another debate. Kids for the kids dumbing. Oh, I love this trend among famous kids. Angelina Jolie and Tom Cruise's kid, Brad Pitt's kid, to change their last names when they turn 18. Change their last names when they turn their 18. And how dare you? How dare you? No, did you hear about this? Suri Cruz, S-U-R-I, Suri Cruz changed her last name to her mother's. So now she's Suri Holmes. And Angelina Jolie's kid has changed her name from Pitt, her last name from Brad Pitt, to who knows what. But how dare they? Here they have, they've not only been born into a life of privilege, which can happen to stockbrokers, smart investors, real estate moguls, all that, but they have been born into a life of sparkly wealth, not just wealth, but sparkly wealth, where any place they go, if they said their name, the door would open and it would sparkle. Oh, no, no, no. Please come and sit at this table. Please sit over here. Can I introduce you to so-and-so? That last name, combined with the wealth, gives them access to the entire world. They get access to everything that they want. And for them to be so arrogant, did Brad Pitt beat them? Did Tom Cruise beat her? Or was he just negligent? Yeah, but the checks came, didn't they? I never heard about any of those kids being homeless or not having food or not having shelter. Food, clothing, shelter. Oh, yeah, their clothes look really good. And Suri, much to her mother's credit, is going to a almost public school. There, it's a trick. In New York City and Manhattan, in New York City, throughout the whole city, there are two types of public schools. There are public schools, and then that anybody can go to and get into. And then there are public schools that anybody can go to if they can get into. Now, she's at LaGuardia. Now, LaGuardia, you have to apply. You have to take admissions tests. You don't just get to go to that high school. And throughout the city, like Stevenson and Bronx Science, there are high schools and middle schools that you have to take tests. You have to meet certain requirements to get in. Or you have to have a special talent. There's a special talent celebrity kids school. Kids who make their living going to commercial auditions all day. They have their own school in New York City. She's at one of those schools. It's an almost public school. She has a great life, and it's because of her father. I don't think the Dawson Creek residuals are still running. You think Katie Holmes is still getting Dawson's Creek? Dawson's Creek residuals? I don't think so. I don't think she is. I think all the money's from Mission Impossible, all the money's from Tom. And she should respect her father. And she may not like him, and she may not like... But wait. Her mother was a volunteer. Her mother was the daughter of a lawyer. Her mother was a successful television actress, a prime-time television actress. Her mother was a host on Saturday Night Live. Her mother was smart. Her mother is smart. So smart, she married Tom Cruise to... disavow your father, unless he was abusive, which we have no reason to believe they were, to disavow their father, who provided for them, supported them, but more importantly, their mother volunteered to marry. And this is the part that always mystifies me about divorces and, you know, how evil men are. Wait, what do you mean how evil men are? You want to be chairman of the board? You're a smart woman. You want to be autonomous? Great, fine. You married the jerk. You married him. Why didn't you ask more questions? Well, men are stupid. You know, men are stupid. In a divorce situation, if a man says, oh, she did these terrible things, well, that's because the guy only wanted one thing. Men are idiots. But women are supposed to be much smarter. And they volunteer to marry these people. And they volunteered to marry. She volunteered to marry Brad effing Pitt. And Tom Cruise. Allegedly, they were both at the top of the food chain. They were the ones that every woman wanted to marry. Clearly, Angelina and Katie did not ask enough questions. They needed to ask more questions. All right, coming up, you and I are going to go over the summer hits of 2024 and decide which is the hottest summer hit of 2024. And this way you will appear to be current and up to date for your kids. Sterling.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Ben from Lost.
When did you start sleeping with a bottle of scotch by the bed?
When the nightmares started.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Top rules to take your girlfriend to the strip club. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the NYPD Police Commissioners from 1987 to 2007. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
You know, I love my country, but what gets into people every year? Hi, I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain later here on Sterling at Night.
Shoplifter threatens to shoot up the place. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Sterling every night, the cop boy is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. Detective Vic Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to rate the police commissioners I served under during my 20-year tenure with the New York City Police Department. Now, I got hired in 1987, and the police commissioner was Ben Ward, and I'd have to rate Ben the worst. During my graduation ceremony at Madison Square Garden, Ben Ward couldn't stay awake and fell asleep at the podium. My dad filmed it and asked later on, who was that guy? I go, Dad, that was the police commissioner. He was police commissioner from 1984 to 1989. From 89 to 90, there was a guy who steps in for a cup of coffee who didn't rock the boat. His name was Richard J. Condon. Didn't really know much about the guy. Wasn't there that long. But from 1990 to 1992, we had Lee Out of Town Brown. Now, Lee Brown wasn't a bad guy. He was a social climbing political animal who always had his eye on the next job. Before arriving at the NYPD, Lee Brown was the public safety commissioner of Atlanta and later the police commissioner of Houston's police department. He was very big into community policing. Wasn't a bad guy, but just wasn't around all that much. From 92 to 94, that's when late great David Dinkins was mayor, and he tasked Raymond W. Kelly as police commissioner. I don't know. Little Ray kind of reminded me of Popeye the Sailor Man, and people tend to forget he wasn't tough on crime under the Dinkins administration. Afterwards, from 1994 to 1996, there was a change. The NYPD decided to hire outside the department, and that was William J. Bratton, who came from the Boston Police Department. In my opinion, Bill Bratton was the best police commissioner that I had during my tenure. Bill Bratton understood that to fight crime, you had to start with the quality of life issues that would lead to bigger and better things. Bill Bratton was also instrumental in getting the NYPD cops 9mm. From 1996 to 2000, we had William Safer. Now, I like Safer. In my opinion, he was a fair and decent man. He came over the NYPD after running the U.S. Marshals Service. I got promoted under him. Funny story, when I went to the podium, I got nervous and almost shook the wrong guy's hand. Wasn't a bad guy. Now, from 2000 to 2001, Bernie Kerik comes along. And I don't think Bernie was a bad guy, but the people around him were drunk with power and didn't mind letting you know it. And then from 2002 to 2013, so I retire in 2007, Raymond W. Kelly comes back. Now talk about Irish welfare. The guy already served as police commissioner and he comes back, but this time he's tough on crime. So there you have it. All the police commissioners that I served under during my 20-year New York City police career. So for more insight and interesting stories into the New York City Police Department, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Laughing in the Line of Duty.
Sterling every night, lesbians in space, who exports glass.
How
many people have you slept with?
Too many to count.
No.
I wish I was like you. But we have the same hair, so I'm on my way.
Everything is wonderful, and being here is heavenly. Every single day, she says, everything is free. I used to be so careless, as if I couldn't care less. Did I have to make this mess when I was Mary's prayer? Suddenly the heavens roared, suddenly the rain came down, and suddenly it was washed away, the Mary that I knew.
Jessica Biel.
And so when you find somebody,
quoting Lucille Ball, Jessica Biel, married to Justin Timberlake, just announced, quote, "I married a loser." Well, there you have it. Angelina Jolie announced that she was a loser married to Brad Pitt while taking probably hundreds of millions of dollars from Brad. And then Jessica Biel announcing she was a loser marrying Justin Timberlake. And Katie Holmes' kid announcing she's a loser to have the Cruz last name from her father, Tom Cruise. When are any of these women going to say, this was my mistake in judgment? I didn't ask enough questions. I was blinded by their wealth, and I was blinded by their wealth, and I was blinded by their attractiveness, and I was blinded by their wealth. The whole system is set up to be empathetic toward the poor, suffering wife. I don't think Jessica Biel is doing any suffering, do you? I don't think Angelina Jolie does any suffering. God, she'd be so annoying. Could you imagine the nightmare of being married to her? Oh my God, could you just imagine it? There you are in your 18-wheeler. Think about that. Think about the life of being married to Angelina Jolie. And imagine if you had a cold. You know, you had a cold. Married Angelina Jolie. Oh, I was a sniffles, honey. Oh, what? What? Unbelievable. What is this? This is Danny Wilson. It's called Mary's Prayer. I really like this song.
So if I see,
all right, coming up in just seconds, you and I will go over the top three summer songs of 2024 and decide which one we like the best. I'm Walter M. Sterling, 44 past the hour. This is Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok.
Now I will get dressed. Goodbye.
Best thing they ever did. The OJs. All right. Now, let's go to work.
Ask me how I know, and I'll tell you who
used to be my at any given time, but I will, darn it, because I'm a professional broadcaster. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Night. We're on 6 nights a week. There's no one else who does 6 nights a week. Oh, they might cheat. They might say, oh, and then we do a best of. No, I don't do best ofs. Here are the three top summer songs for 2024. These are the ones jockeying for position of the best summer song of 2024. This is Sabrina Carpenter. Sabrina Carpenter, it's called Espresso.
I can't relate to desperation. Might give a fuck.
And here's Billie Eilish. Here's Billie Eilish. And it's called... it's called... Lunch. I could never get enough. I could buy her so much stuff. It's a craving, not a crush. Call me when you're there. I said I'll buy you something rare. The always annoying Billie Eilish. Trying hard not to overeat. You're so sweet. Thank you, Billie Eilish. And then Ariana Grande, who will never leave us alone. We can't be friends. I didn't think you would understand me. How could you ever even try? I don't wanna tiptoe, and I don't wanna hide, but I don't wanna feed this monstrous fire. Just wanna let this story die, and I'll be alright. We can't be friends, but I'd like to just pretend. Those are the three top summer songs. Sabrina Carpenter, Billie Eilish, and Ariana Grande. Those are the top summer songs. What do you think? 888-688-WALT, 888-688-9258. And here's a secret 2024 top summer song.
We're guys. We keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. In case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man. So he won't take me down to his lair deep under the mountain.
What are you talking about?
Underground. That's where he keeps his dirt.
Now, the hottest act. Billie Eilish, hot. Sophia, hot. Ariana Grande, hot. But the hottest act, the one that Elton John is all excited about, is a woman named Chapel Roan. And if you get a chance to see a Chapel Roan concert, if you say to your 18-year-old daughter, hey, let's go to see a Chapel Roan concert, she won't want to go with you, but boy, will you go up about 10 notches in her mind.
It's cool. You can say that we are nothing, but you know the truth. And guess I'm the fool with her arms out like an angel through the car sunroof. I don't wanna call it off.
Hot as could be, Chapel Roan, a known lesbian. It's Pride Month. Let me see if I can find for you what Elton John said about her, because it's pretty cool, pretty amazing how profound the endorsement is. This will take me a second because, you know, we don't have any real system set up. I mean, that would be crazy, right? I mean, that'd be just nuts. We've got this and this and that. I don't know if we're going to get there. We always have this available.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do? Why?
I'll get you, my pretty, and your little dog, too.
Here's what Elton John said about Chapel Roan, R-O-A-N.
My last guest on the 400th Rocket Hour is the incredible Chapel Roan. It wasn't so long ago that you were my guest on the program, but a lot has happened since then.
Oh, yeah.
It's been amazing to see what's happened. We found you with the Pink Pony Club, which was the first track we ever played from you. And it was astonishing to hear someone new and vibrant like you and the songwriting quality that you have. Since then, your journey has kind of accelerated, especially recently, with Good Luck, Babe, your single, and the album is doing so brilliantly.
Chapel Roan, R-O-A-N. The music's cutting edge, alternative, but accessible. Even you who like hooks from the 60s and the 70s, you will like Chapel Roan. My daughter, my tomorrow 19-year-old daughter, went to see her and loved it. Absolutely thought it was fantastic. Chapel Roan, endorsed by freaking Elton John. Does it get better than that if you're a musician? I don't think so. All right, I'm Walter M. Sterling. Yes, I have an 18-year-old daughter. She was the one in the car accident. I told you a couple months ago that my 18-year-old daughter was in a nasty car accident. She was the passenger, thank goodness. And you gave me great advice about what to do. You said, don't listen to a kid who's just been in a car wreck with a concussion. Get a freaking lawyer. And we got a lawyer, a really good lawyer. And one day, I imagine we'll see a check. The poor kid's had surgery on her wrist, had to go to rehab for 6 months to be able to walk. She's a competitive ballerina. She will not be performing ballet again anytime soon. It was a traumatic and big deal event. And but we had lots of good wishes from you. She's healed well. She's recovered well. But this was a big deal. And she has a nasty scar on her wrist. That's not going to go away. That is one ugly scar. But tomorrow she turns 19. And there you have it. Oh, Walter, you have a 19-year-old? Yeah, but listen carefully. I also have a 12-year-old. I have a 12-year-old who's entering sixth grade next year. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Goblin.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome, Midnight Misfits. Welcome, my Midnight Misfits. This is where you and I belong. You can keep that bed up, you know. This is AM, the voice cuts through. You can keep that bed up there. Top 40, guys. Dr. Dave, what's your weather?
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Top rules to take your girlfriend to the strip club. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling at night.
Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I rate the NYPD police commissioners from 1987 to 2007. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
You know, I love my country, but what gets into people every year? Hi, I'm Brad, the old-fashioned talk host. I'll explain later here on Sterling at Night.
Shoplifter threatens to shoot up the place. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling at Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line, 888-688-WALT.
Strippers on the loose, we're live.
There's no question about it. Taking your girlfriend or perhaps spouse to a strip club could be fraught with danger. It also could open up your wife and girlfriend to knowing that the strip club is nothing but good, clean fun. So here are some rules from Sin City VIP. Don't take your lady to a strip club near your home. That could lead to all sorts of issues, like one of the dancers running into her at the grocery store and saying, hey, I saw you at the strip club. Also, the gentlemen who go to the strip club, you don't want them hitting on your gal. Don't take your lady to someplace expensive. Here's why. because when you get that hall pass to go out and hang out with the guys, maybe for a bachelor party, or just go out to the strip club with the guys, if it's really expensive, she's going to say, no, too much money. Don't take her somewhere that is too dark. Do your research. Ask friends and take a peek at the interior shots of the club online. Dark club equals creepy. Creepy club means she won't let you go into a strip club ever again. Don't force your girlfriend to put $1 bills in the cleavage of a dancer or between her legs or in her mouth. You may suggest it because it's an awful lot of fun, but don't push her. And here's my last tip. Go on a night where the club has hired a featured dancer, you know, like Stormy Daniels or one of the Real Housewives of some city. Featured dancers often have very fun sets, which will take the edge off of your lady in the club. Tips for you to go to the strip club. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool, Strippers on the Loose, Sterling at Night.
All right, 888-688-WALT, 888-688-WALT. Welcome to Sterling every damn night. This show is actually on six nights a week, and I hope this station presents it to you as the great gift that it is to American radio, the tremendous gift that this show is, because we do other stuff. We don't do the normal stuff. We do other stuff. Is it any good? Probably not. But it's different. Thank God it's different. Yes. Did you ever work for anybody who was great, like truly brilliant, and maybe you didn't even realize it at the time? For 5 years, I worked at ABC. Yeah, that ABC. ABC Television, radio. Today, it's owned by Disney, but it didn't always be owned by Disney. It used to be owned by a company called Capital Cities, which was a humorless group of people out of Buffalo. And then before that, it was owned by ABC. It was owned by its founder, a man named Leonard Goldenson. And sometimes I think about Leonard Goldenson and I think how no CEO today is anywhere like Leonard Goldenson, except maybe, I don't know, people that you and I consider very eccentric, like Elon Musk, the richest man in the world. Let me tell you about Leonard Goldenson, because this was an unusual guy. Get this. In the early 1960s, there were the payola scandals in radio. And the payola scandals were disc jockeys getting paid by record companies to play songs. It was against commerce. It was a federal commerce violation, Federal Trade Commission violation. However, it was not illegal. And it wasn't well thought of, but it wasn't illegal. The problem came when the disc jockeys didn't report their taxes. That's when the trouble came. Payola came as a result, the laws as a result of those trials, as a result of those congressional hearings. And Dick Clark, an ABC guy, was dragged in front of Congress, but so was Alan Freed. Now, Dick Clark was Dick Clark, and he was slick, and he could explain things, and he promised never to do anything bad again, and he apologized, and he showed them all their paper, and he said, I'll never do this again. Okay, no problems for Dick Clark. Alan Freed was convicted of taking payola, and it was like, you know, he was given a fine is basically what it was. He wasn't sent to jail or anything. However, it tarnished the reputation of the radio station he was working at the time, which was WABC in New York. And the owner of WABC in New York, ABC Inc., Leonard Goldenson, the chairman, said, never again. I'm selling the radio division. I am not going to go through this again. And he was worried that it was endemic to the industry. It was a part of the business. He wanted no part of bribes being determining his playlists. At the time, there was a general manager of WXYZ in Detroit, owned by ABC. And his name was Hal Neal. Hal Neal went to Leonard Goldenson and said, listen, if you let me run the radio division, I will clean it up and you will never have another problem. And he did. The ABC, AM, and FM stations under Hal Neal were the cleanest radio stations in America. You couldn't meet with a record promoter. You couldn't take lunch from a record promoter. You could have nothing to do with the record industry, which was interesting because ABC owned a label. Anyway, he cleaned it up, and Leonard kept the radio stations. But then Leonard's influence and the way he operated the company was, I've never seen anything like it before or since. Every holiday, Leonard distributed a beautiful book of paintings, and they were his paintings. He was a painter, a hobbyist, an artist. He had the soul of an artist. He loved all of that world. But he'd put out a book of his paintings so we could see the paintings Leonard painted, which was charming. But the really interesting part was that he wrote an essay about each painting and what it meant to him and why he painted it. And imagine being the CEO, chairman of ABC, and sharing with all the people who worked for you your soul. He shared his soul. He did some other amazing things as the CEO and chairman of ABC, and I'll share them with you, my fellow misfits, my midnight misfits, because Leonard was a misfit. This is Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Larry David.
None of your business. How about that?
Look at that. It's 20 past the hour, 20 past midnight. Sterling every damn night. I worked for Leonard Goldenson when he was chairman, founder of ABC, the ABC television network, radio stations. And he was a very interesting chairman because his background was in theater ownership. He owned movie theaters. And therefore, he was very aware of audience trends, audience response. He was a showman. He liked to make a show. And it's so rare to have a CEO of any industry involved with the product, understanding the product of what they make, loving it. The reason Lee Iacocca was so respected as the chairman of Chrysler is he was a car guy. He liked new cars. He liked the way they smelled, the way they performed, their accessories. He loved cars. And that communicated to the staff. Leonard Goldenson, when he was the chairman, founder of ABC, loved the show. And he knew a great show. And he respected all the executives who were showmen. He didn't really seem to have much interest in people with spreadsheets and, people who could put things into formulas. He liked the old Charlies, whether they were 20 or 80. He liked the old Charlies who understood how to make a show, a radio show. He got it. And the sales factor wasn't a big deal. His belief was that if you make a great show, you'll sell it. The great salesman, the greatest salesman, has a great show to sell. That's what a great salesman has, great programming. That's what he believed. That's what Leonard believed. Leonard also had some other interesting traits and some interesting attributes that I got to witness and respect up close. When Alan Shaw was president of the ABC FM stations, he created a format you probably like called album rock. Today it's called classic rock. And I swear to God, the reason album rock came into being was because of Light My Fire by the Doors. Light My Fire by the Doors had two versions. It had a hit version, which was 2 minutes and 38 seconds, and it had a long version, which was over 6 minutes. Up till then, we were never aware of any long versions. All we knew were the hits. But the Doors had two versions of Light My Fire, and Light My Fire, the long version, was amazing. It was brilliant, and it wasn't on top 40 stations. And Alan Shaw, president of the ABC FM station, said, you know what? Let's play the long version of these songs. Let's find the album versions of all of these songs and the stereo versions of these songs. And it was album rock. He started the album rock format on the, and he convinced Leonard Goldenson to take his FM radio stations and put on this brand new, completely unproven format and see. Okay, so it's a radio station. You switch it from automation to album rock with live disc jockeys. Not a big deal. See what happens. Oh, it was a big deal. And the reason it was a big deal was that ABC was, and I think still is, a union company. And in order for them to get rid of the automation on the ABC FM stations, they had to dump the automation and hire 7 disc jockeys who were in a union and 7 control board engineers who were in a different union. And the control board engineers' union scale was higher than the disc jockeys. This meant that the ABC FM stations had to dump what they were doing, which meant stopping the revenue for what they were doing. The advertisers who liked what they were doing now no longer had a place to put that money. And from scratch, they had to sell a new format that had never been heard, that had drug lyrics and rebellion and, raged against the machine. And he put that on the air. Leonard just said, all right, usually what most cowardly CEOs would do today is they'd say, well, you got 7 stations. You want to change them all to this new format? We can't afford that. Do one. Pick one. And I ran into the same thing when I tried to put on a new format at NBC. And I was able to pull it off, too, because the CEO, Fred Silverman, let me. No one else wanted me to do it. Everybody else said, why don't you start with one? Why don't you just do one? The reason I didn't do one, and the reason Alan Shaw didn't do one at ABC, was the same reason, which is we didn't know which one was going to work. We didn't know how to figure out which one might work or which ones wouldn't. And if we picked the wrong one, then nothing would ever happen. Logically, Album Rock, Light My Fire, that music should have exploded in San Francisco. Monterey Pop Festival, it should have exploded in San Francisco. That station should have taken off. Of course, that station did the worst for a really long time. San Francisco station didn't work. But Leonard Goldenson, chairman of ABC, did not say stop it. He just said, well, some take longer. Which station took off first and best? The one in Detroit. WRIF. That exploded first. That was the big success. And that's how Album Rock started. Many years later, WABC, the music station under Leonard Goldenson, needed to switch from music to talk because it was on AM. And in the 80s, music wasn't going to work on AM. It wasn't going to work on AM anywhere. They were all dying. It was nobody's fault. I love people who blame, well, you know, if they'd stuck with it longer, no, it would have never worked. And they put together a business plan, and I was in the room. I was in the room when the business plan was put together for WABC as a talk station. And this never, listen to me, this never would happen today. Never, ever would have happened today. They decided at ABC that it would take 10 years for WABC as a talk station to make a profit. It was going to take 10 years. And nobody complained. Nobody blinked. And Leonard Goldenson, the chairman, thought, okay, that's how long it's going to take. Why was it going to take 10 years? They didn't know. The reason it was going to take 10 years is because KABC in Los Angeles had switched from middle-of-the-road, boring programming to an aggressive talk format with guys screaming and women screaming, good talk, and phone calls, and a lot of people screaming. That took 10 years. That was the template. That was the model. WABC, therefore, was going to take 10 years. It took 11. Leonard didn't care. That's what it was going to take. But there were two other things that Leonard Goldenson did that no other chairman, CEO would ever do, and I couldn't believe it. I'm at a conference, an executive retreat with Leonard, and it was like 4 in the afternoon. The retreat was supposed to be over at 5. Leonard gets up and starts to leave. And I didn't have a mortgage or a wife, and I looked at him, and I was a smartass. Sorry. And I was a smartass, and I looked at Leonard, and I said, where are you going? I was a punk. And I look at the chairman of ABC, and I go, where are you going? Where are you going? And he looked at me, and he said, our company is opening a movie today. They had a movie feature film division. Our company is opening a movie today. And I go to one of the theaters and talk to the audiences that saw it first. I talk to the audiences on the first day to see how they liked my movie. That was his research. He trusted what he learned by talking to the audience watching his movie. And that's why he had to leave. He knew when that show was getting out in Westchester. That's where we were. Where it was getting out in Westchester, and Leonard was going to stand outside the theater and talk to the people who paid to see his movie and find out what they thought of it. That was his research, the chairman of ABC. But the most brilliant and amazing fact about the chairman of ABC, Leonard Goldenson, to me, was that Leonard Goldenson, the chairman, founder of ABC, flew commercial, and when he flew commercial, he flew coach. First radio station I ever worked at, not telling old radio stories, but this is kind of interesting. The first radio station I ever worked at has a regular reunion, and this regular reunion happened this past weekend. I want to share it with you coming up in just seconds. Sterling.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Judge Judy.
The three of you tried to be roommates. It didn't work out, and now you're bothering us.
You're right, Your Honor.
You're right. I know I'm right. So let's deal with this quickly and expeditiously, because it's sushi day today.
It's the people of Walmart on Sterling at night.
Criminals believe they can get away with almost anything these days. They, quite frankly, often do. Lax prosecutors will let people back on the street after doing a shoplifting, even threatening violence. And this woman knew everything about that. This is coming from New Jersey. Joyzy in the house. Washington Township. Woman threatened to shoot up a loss prevention worker at a Walmart store. And she ran across six lanes of traffic before taking into custody Saturday night, according to police. Now, Washington Township police say Ivory Ajamu of Sicklerville. I love Sicklerville. It's great. At the Walmart in Cross Keys Commons Shopping Center. And I'll tell you what, she went and did some shoplifting. Little five-finger pickup. Loss prevention, they're watching you really, really carefully. And so Ivory gets picked up. She made a run for it. Police have arrested this woman for assaulting a police officer, shoplifting, resisting arrest, refusal to be fingerprinted, obstruction of justice, and criminal trespassing at the Salem County Correctional Facility. Currently, my guess is the bail will be $5, and she'll be back on the street going through the Walmart. We as Americans, and generally this is not a political show, and this is not a political segment on the show, but we got to stop this. And you got to ask your local elected officials about, hey, let's lock the bad people up. Sweet people work at Walmart. Those blue-vested heroes need to be protected by our city and state and district attorneys. And that's a hill I'll die on. For the people of Walmart, this is Vila Houle, Sterling at Night.
All right. Welcome, my Midnight Misfits. You don't fit in. We just don't fit in. The first job I ever had in radio was at WCRV, an AM daytimer. You know what a daytimer is? Believe it or not, there was a time when there were radio stations on the AM band that only were on the air when the sun was up. And when the sun went down, they went off the air because radio signals go further at night and they would interfere with each other inappropriately. This past weekend, the remaining living people who worked at WCRV got together and they had a barbecue thanks to Frank Cipolla. The great Frank Cipolla put it together. And this station has been off the air for many, many years. But let me tell you what my, did I ever tell you what my first job in radio was? The thing about everybody in radio, at least everybody who's good, is they all had the same horrible start, which is they got themselves into a radio station. They didn't care how they did it. It was a calling. They had to work there. No matter what, they had to work in radio. And they weaseled their way in somehow and did anything. Anything they were asked to do, they did. Sweeping floors, no problem. Working 12 hours for no pay, no problem. Whatever they had to do to get into radio, they would do because it was a calling, like a priest without the benefits. My first job in radio combined everything that I did not like. Ready? When you do play-by-play for football, high school football, you usually do it in bleachers that pigeons have visited. You do it on the top of 50 or 100-foot towers that don't have guardrails. And you do it in November, when through most of our great country, it's 20 below. Now, I had the gift of being terrified of heights, not understanding football, not caring about football, and, oh, by the way, being 50 miles from home. Because the closest radio station that would let me hang around was 50 miles from home. And I was 16, and I don't know why they did it. But my parents, every Saturday, would drive me 50 miles to that radio station, drop me off, and then pick me up at the end of the day and drive me home. They would make that trip for me every single Saturday. Now, the general manager, owner of the radio station, he did the color for the football, and the news director did the play-by-play. But somebody had to turn off and on their microphones. That was me. I was the, quote, engineer for this. And I sat between these two guys and turned off and on their microphone. They had a spotter. I wasn't the spotter. They had a spotter. Me, the spotter, color guy, owner of the station. But then, and it was really interesting, it was an interesting economy, it was sponsored by the local Coca-Cola bottler. And I mean local Coca-Cola bottler. This wasn't out of McCann Erickson in New York. No, this was from the bottling plant down the street. And the general manager of the bottling plant down the street, or the accountant, would show up at the football game and hand the general manager a check or maybe an envelope with cash to sponsor the football game. And when that cash showed up, or the check, then it was sponsored by Coca-Cola. Sponsored by your local Coca-Cola bottler. They sponsored the high school football games. Now, high school football games in a local community is a very big deal. It's a cultural touchstone. But at most of these football stadiums where we broadcast the play-by-play, I'm on top of a 50-foot tower. And the way you get up the 50-foot tower is a straight ladder. I'm terrified of heights. I don't exactly have upper body strength. I'm climbing up this ladder, and now I'm on the top of a platform that if I look down, I could fall down. I was terrified the whole game and bored. I was simultaneously terrified and bored. But remember, I told you it was a daytimer, and that meant in November and December, the sun would go down at 4:30, and we had to sign off at 4:30. Back at the station, they had to sign off at 4:30. What did that mean? It meant that our listeners didn't hear the end of the game. The game would end before 4:30, but we had to sign off by federal law. We recorded the play-by-play for the next 15, 20, 30 minutes and air it in morning drive the next day. The results of the game, the results of the play-by-play were aired like at 8 the next morning. Because why? Because Coca-Cola had sponsored it. And you may say, well, why would I do this? Why would I be terrified? Why would I be terrified of heights know nothing about football, knew nothing about those teams, knew nothing about those high schools, 50 miles from home, freezing. Oh, that was the great gift. Because I was the engineer, I got to wear headphones, and that kept my ears warm. Why would I do all this? Well, because, you know, I was in showbiz. It's 45 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. You are the Midnight Misfit. You can find out everything about the show at waltersterlingshow.com. waltersterlingshow.com. And every email I get gets answered. It's Walter Sterling Show. No, it's Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I answer every email. And it's a pleasure to be with you. We're here every single week from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern. It is the embarrassment to American radio as we know it. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Amy Robach.
I have chosen love in my life, and I'm very excited about that path. I'm living my truth. There has been a price to pay, but I'm excited about the future.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk. Empty plates lay neglected on the table until Olivia inched her chair backward. It's getting late, she said. I didn't realize what time it was. Gavin didn't move. I haven't even served your dessert yet. My apologies. It's okay. Her mouth twisted to one side. I should probably get going, though. I certainly wasn't planning on asking you to leave yet, if you're concerned about overstaying your welcome. She fidgeted with the cloth napkin in her lap. I have an early meeting with a client tomorrow, so I... Olivia... Notes of amusement tinged his voice. Did you really forget how I have access to your calendar? Her eyes widened for a split second. She recovered swiftly. Even so, she said as she rose from her seat, we both have to work in the morning, and I don't want to be late. Okay. Her gaze flicked toward the door, yet she remained rooted in place. If you want to leave, I'm not going to stop you. Gavin set down his wine glass and stood in front of her, leaving a small gap between them. However, before you go, there is one thing I want. She tilted her head back to maintain eye contact, still not moving away from him. What is it? A deep chuckle resonated from his chest. He lifted his hand as if to caress her face, then reached behind her. When he released the clip holding her hair in place, glossy waves tumbled to her shoulders. Spots of pink appeared on her cheeks, now framed by the chestnut strands. Much better, don't you think? Thank you for indulging me. Anything else? The implied challenge in those two words drove him crazy, but he forced himself to exercise restraint. We've already discussed how smart you are. As he spoke, he twirled a lock of her hair around one finger. Before you even set foot inside my home, there's no doubt in my mind you analyzed every potential outcome. Her chin jutted out. You're not as subtle as you think you are, you know. He let out another devilish laugh. Then why don't we both stop pretending? Olivia's lips were soft and warm when he ducked his head to press his mouth against hers. His tongue delved past them, and he tasted the earthy remnants of the wine they'd shared. As she engaged him with a playful jab of her own, he threaded his fingers through her loose hair, holding her close. resting her hands on his chest. He leaned into him. Kissing her was everything Gavin had dreamed of, though he expected nothing less from her. He circled his free arm around her waist, reveling in the perfect way she fit against him. The heat emanating from her body was intoxicating, and he probed farther into her mouth, eager to explore every part of her. He swirled her tongue around his, matching his enthusiasm, then nipped at his lower lip. The sharp sensation destroyed the last of his control. He grabbed her by the shoulders and slammed her against the wall, pinning her with his full weight. Her squeal of surprise was muffled by his mouth as he reclaimed her, yet she didn't push him away. She writhed underneath him. He needed more. He abandoned her lips to kiss a trail down the side of her neck. Her smooth, flawless skin tempted him. He resisted the urge to leave marks. A soft gasp echoed in his ears as he pushed aside her collar to continue lower on his path, and she draped her arms around his shoulders. The rise of her chest as his fingers found the top button of her blouse spurred him onward, irresistible invitation. One by one, Gavin unfastened the closures, all while focusing on the sensitive spot above her collarbone. When the two halves of her shirt drifted apart, he slipped his hands inside, resting them on her waist. Her bare skin beneath his palms felt divine, and he yearned to touch all of her. But he'd been formulating his plan for weeks and refused to deviate from it. Abruptly, he straightened, stepping backward as he caught his breath. Olivia stared at him with wide eyes, confusion washing over her delicate features as she remained flattened against the wall. He ran his hand through his hair, smirking as he looked her over. "I've been having a wonderful time this evening, but you're right. It is getting late." He reached out to brush a stray piece of hair away from her forehead, yet touched her nowhere else. "Stay or leave, it's entirely up to you. But it does have to be your decision." He turned away and strode down the hallway without glancing back. Inside his bedroom, he switched on one lamp to cast a dim light over the room. He began his usual nightly routine as if nothing was out of the ordinary, beginning with placing his shoes on the rack inside the closet. A tiny part of him admitted there was a possibility she'd adjust her shirt, gather her belongings, and race out the door. But he was confident he wouldn't be spending the night alone. "I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, The Hummingbird and the Hawk, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon.
Thanks for listening. We appreciate it so.
Join us next week at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for another Walter Stern Show.
And my classroom should be as well air-conditioned as your favorite bar.
Join us next week at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific, for another Walter Stern Show.
Next Sunday.
All right.
Right. Stay bright.
Hi, this is Dom Geer.